On today's episode of The Front Row, we are at the Texas Tech University School of Music in the office of Alan Hicks, who is the new director of opera theater here at the School of Music. Alan, welcome.
Thank you.
And I guess I should say welcome to Texas. Welcome to Texas Tech. You're new in the position. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, welcome back to Texas. I actually went to school here twice, actually, and taught at two different universities in Texas before Texas Tech. So I've had, outside of the city of New York and where I grew up in Mississippi, I've spent the most amount of my time here in Texas.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about your journey to become an opera theater director and how that all happened.
Well, there's a lot of left turns. I started as an instrumental musician. I grew up wanting to be a band director. I played trumpet, and then I switched to French horn about my sophomore year in high school. And I originally went to school to become a music education major and to play horn. But I quickly found that I didn't like the school I was at, and I didn't like playing horn anymore. And those are never good things when you're trying to be a horn major and or a band director. So I transferred to Mississippi State University, and I changed my major, I think, twice before I eventually got pulled back to music. And I was pulled back as an instrumental music education major, which is what I had left in the first place. That didn't last very long. I think it lasted about a semester, but I was desperate to be a musician. And I had been in theater productions and musical theater specifically and choral ensembles in high school. And so I wandered into my who became my voice teacher's office, and I said, "Hey, someone told me once I could sing. Would you listen to me?" And she said, she didn't say I was any good. She just said, "You can study with me." And so I started studying with her. I won a couple of competitions right off the bat. And then I got scholarship offers from a couple of different places. And I ended up going to Rice in Houston. And I got my master's degree in vocal performance. And then I immediately auditioned for young artist programs. And I got, the summer I graduated, I got a contract to sing at the Chautauqua Opera, which became sort of a seminal place for me because it gave me my first contract as a singer, but it also gave me my first contract as a director some, 10 to 15 years later. My career has been a series of I'm going to walk this direction until I hit a wall, and then I'll turn left and go that direction for a little while. And I sang for about 5 or 6 years professionally, a lot of young artist contracts. And then I was told, a producer had told me that he thought I was a tenor, because I was a baritone at the time. He said I needed to make that transition. And I decided to take a couple of years off to sort of retrain my voice. And in the interim, I got offered a job teaching vocal production to actors at the Actor Studio. And I sort of parlayed that into an eventual appointment at a place called the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which is very different from the thing that most singers know, the American Musical and Dramatic Academy. The American Academy of Dramatic Arts is a strictly theatrical conservatory, and it's the place that Robert Redford went and Grace Kelly and, Dom DeLuise and various and sundry other people throughout history. And I became very fascinated by what they were doing there. And I decided when it became time for me to go back and start auditioning, I just wasn't as interested anymore. I wanted to be on the other side of the table. I wanted to be on the theatrical side. So I applied to a couple of directing programs, and I decided that I didn't want another master's degree, which most directing programs are. The only school in the country that offered a doctorate in directing was the University of Texas, and that's how I ended up in Austin. I finished that degree, and I immediately went back to Chautauqua for my first directing contracts, and I stayed there for 5 years, I think. And then I bounced around the country from professional gig to professional gig. In the interim, I took a couple of visiting professorships at places like the University of Iowa, Sam Houston State, which was the other place. I also ended up teaching for a year at Houston before I got the contract at San Diego State, San Diego Opera, which was a joint position between the two. And I really wanted to do that because it was a professional opera organization that also had an educational component. And so I went there for 5 years, and that's where I was right before I was offered this position and then came here from San Diego.
All right.
That's what? A circuitous route. That's,
what a journey, though. That's great. So did you, in that space, did you decide that you liked straight theater, that you still wanted to do opera because you had sung and had experience? How did that work?
Well, I'm still a musician at heart. I mean, from the word go, I'm still a musician. So, yes, I do enjoy doing straight theater. I do enjoy doing even musical theater, but my heart lies in opera. And I also feel like there is a hole in the training of singers that I am sort of intimately aware of because I went through the process. I went through it. A lot of directors have singing careers and then turn to directing, but most of them don't go back to school and study acting. And they certainly, most of them also don't teach in acting conservatories where that's the only thing that's happening, where you're actually looking at acting technique and trying to figure out how to put those things to practice in opera. And so what became my focus was training singers to be better actors and training singers to learn roles from a theatrical perspective rather than from only a singing perspective. I'm sort of Don Quixote charging the windmill when it comes to trying to convince people that the words matter, that the theater matters, that it's not just about singing pretty, that they actually have to know what they're singing and they actually have to portray those characters in realistic ways. And so when I published my book in 2011, which was part of my thesis at Texas, it was about taking Stanislavski's work specifically, but acting teachers, the people that you've heard about, Lee Strasberg in the Actor's Studio, and taking those techniques, sort of getting rid of the things that are not useful in opera, and then finding a way to train singers to use those techniques to better themselves on stage. And so that's become my educational focus, and sort of it's also in my research. It's what I write about most. Why I feel that the operatic art form is suffering from our lack of storytelling, especially when it comes to, you know, things like Bohème, and where everybody just goes to hear this pretty music and no one actually pays attention to the story. And I mean, I'm going to get myself into a lot of trouble here, but if anyone ever paid attention to La Bohème as a story, they would probably be pretty mad because it's pretty dumb. it's that kind of thing that I sort of reject, this idea that only the music matters, only the singing matters. It's not true. The art form started as a throwback to Greek theater, not Greek music, but Greek theater. So the camerata in Florence, they were trying to recreate the theater of the ancient Greeks. And from a treatise that they had read, they realized that the ancient Greeks sang their theater. They didn't speak their theater. The Florentine camerata, the guys who created the art form, they were attempting to recreate Greek theater, which was sung. And so at no point was the music supposed to be more important than the theater. They were supposed to be of equal weight. And as a matter of fact, the music was there to support the emotional context of the words. And at some point, we forgot about that. Actually, it's been cyclical. I teach an opera history class here, and we talk a lot about how, you know, every couple of decades or centuries, somebody pipes up and says, this is not what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be telling stories. And they change things, and that lasts, you know, a couple of decades, and then it starts to wane away, and the singers become more important, and the composers and the conductors, and the storyline becomes less important. And then we do it again. And recently, the Met had to cut a lot of things out of its season, and a lot of the things that it cut were the things that people go to for the music alone. And they started focusing more on newer works, which people don't go to the theater to see new works because they love the score. Most of them don't know the score. No one knew who Terence Blanchard was, but they all went to see Fire Shut Up in My Bones. Everybody knows who Verdi is. No one went to see Don Carlo. So therein lies the problem. We have to be offering the audience what they want, and what they want is not to be sung at, but to actually be told a story. At least in my estimation.
Speaking of telling a story, the Opera Theater here is producing an opera this semester, coming up pretty shortly. It's Donizetti's L'Elisir d'Amore, The Elixir of Love. How did you arrive that was an opera that you would like to do here?
Well, so I was hired and then immediately had auditions. I wasn't able to come. I actually watched auditions on Zoom, we heard all the auditions before we ever talked about what shows we were going to do. And then as a faculty, the voice faculty, coaches, the vocal coaches, the conductors, and we all sat in a room and we talked about what we could do with the people that we had. Mm-hmm. I think it was my colleague, Dr. Hayes, Rebecca Hayes, who really was interested in doing L'Elysée d'Amore, and I am a big fan of L'Elysée d'Amore, so of course I was not going to stand in the way of that. It's one of my favorite, I tell the singers all the time, this is one of my favorite bubblegum operas. It's so light, it's so charming. It has some very good, deep moments, but for the most part, it's funny. It's a funny show. And it's a good introduction for them to my process, which is very detailed, very specific, especially in terms of movement, a lot about the words. You have to know what you're saying, and your physical presence has to indicate that you know what you're saying. The physical characterization is very important, so we spend a lot of time on details, and I think that's been fairly an adjustment for them. I think they've been doing a very good job, and they're working really hard. I mean, it's always refreshing to walk into a rehearsal room and see singers who have been there for at least 15 minutes, like walking through things and talking through, you know, what you do at certain points. But we essentially arrived at the piece because it was suggested by Rebecca, and I, again, I love it. The other piece, again, another one of my favorites, was my suggestion, and then we sort of looked at who we had and decided we could do it, and that's Albert Herring. So in my first year here, I get to do two of my favorite things in the world, and they're both comedies. Right. So, I mean, it's not like we're going to depress anyone.
Right. And spectacularly different.
Yes, very much.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Albert Herring, so I love Britain. I've always loved Britain, and most of Britain's work is very sad and depressing and dark. But these are not. This is probably his best comedy, along the lines of Puccini, who never wrote comedies, and then he wrote Johnny Skeeky, which happens to be one of the best operatic comedies ever written, and it was the only one, right? So it's a little bit like that. Albert Herring is one of those pieces, and it again is just fantastically funny and charming, and still has some serious message to it. And if the students think that Elixir has a lot of detail, just wait until Albert Herring. But that's kind of how we got to it. And I was very happy to step into, I mean, there are certain shows I hate. And if they had been the first ones I had to do, that would have probably been, you know, hard to get around. I would have done it and been happy to do
sure.
it. But yeah.
Sure. You have everything in place? Cast, conductor, repetiteur, mm-hmm. those kind of people
yeah.
all in place?
Dr. Brad Light is going to be the conductor for the piece, and one of the conducting students, Gregory Tufts, is going to be conducting one of the four performances. We have double casts, so we have two completely different casts. One cast will be Tuesday, Saturday, and the other cast will be Friday and the Sunday matinee. And we do that a lot of times because not just because we want to give people opportunities, which we do, but we also don't want, these are very difficult things and they're very exhausting. The voice is a muscle, just like any muscle, and you can get repetitive stress injuries. And so if you had to sing these very difficult pieces four nights in a row, it would not be good for your health, especially that late in the semester, right before juries and with all the other things that they're doing. So it gives them a break and a night off. Our repetiteurs, Warner and Jonathan, are students, and this is their first, I believe I'm right when I say that these are their first operas that they've ever played, but they've been amazing. Dr. Averill, Bill Averill, is our coach, and he has been wonderful in preparing them musically. One of the newer things I think that the students are adjusting to is this idea that I don't let them use their scores in staging rehearsal. So they have to be memorized, and what we call off book, by the time they walk on stage. And I do that because they can't physically inhabit a character if they're holding a score and staring at it all the time. They also can't see where they're going. So they have to get out of the book, and they have to get into, and it, I tend to, everything I do is based on the words. And so I always tell them, if you know the words and if you know what they mean, you'll know what your body's supposed to be doing, because that's how I build a character. So we have everything. Our orchestra is students, and I heard them the other night for the first time, and I was very impressed. I mean, sometimes you come into an academic situation and you go, okay, that's what it's going to sound like. I heard them the first night and I thought, wow, they are really good. So I'm definitely impressed and looking forward to putting it all together, which we're going to start doing not this weekend, not next weekend, but the weekend after.
Right. So tell us four performances. Give us the performance dates.
The performance dates are November 9th through 12th. The 9th, 10th, and 11th are at 7 p.m. They're in Allen Theater, and the 12th is a matinee, 2 p.m., I believe.
Right.
And we have a new ticketing system that we're using, but it's on our Facebook page.
Okay.
And since I didn't know what the old one was, I can't tell you what the new one is.
Well, that's fine. And I think more information is probably at music.ttu.edu.
Yes.
Where they at least can find their way to how to take care of that.
Through the calendar specifically, because right. that and on our schedule. Coming up very quickly, actually.
Right,
and
exactly.
We're starting to put the chorus together. I worked with the chorus for the first time last night, and they were so much fun to work with, and they are so eager, and I saw a lot of great things. And you know, the first chorus rehearsals, even in the professional world, can be kind of a mess because there's so many people and you barely have enough time. And we had time to do repetition, which is almost unheard of.
That's great. Yeah. Excellent. Great. The opera is Gaetano Donizetti's The Elixir of Love. And more information about all of that is at music.ttu.edu. Our guest on the show today has been Alan Hicks, who is the new director of opera theater here at the Texas Tech University School of Music. Alan Hicks, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.